Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Coming your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and we stream live at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page. And we also link to our guest's website. We'll be giving you that web address shortly so that you can get more information about what we'll be talking about today, and we encourage you to do that. We've had folks from this particular perspective or philosophical point of view. We've had them on the program a number of times here on Tell Me Your Story, and we're glad to have them back again. Today on the program, we're going to be talking about something that afflicts probably most people in the United States, at least it has for the last year or so. And of course, you know, it's kind of hard to escape the events of the day, whether they be national or state or local or even personal for that matter. And we're going to be talking about 28 Habits of Unhappy People and How to Change Them. The title of this particular work is The Unhappy Syndrome. And Ryuho Okawa, who is a global visionary and a renowned spiritual leader and an international best-selling author with a simple goal, which is to help people find true happiness and create a better world. And his books have sold over 100 million copies worldwide and have been translated into 28 different languages. I mean, there are so many other works that are out there regarding what is called the, and I'm hoping, Mia, that I'm getting this right, happiness science, is that?
Yes, it's happy science.
Happy science. We're going to get a little different, a bit of a definition from you about that, and also talk about the unhappy syndrome, 28 habits of unhappy people, and how to change them. I'm assuming we're talking about how to change the habits, which in turn would change the people.
Yes, exactly.
And this is something that is fascinating. And one of the first things that I would like to do, of course, is to introduce you, Mia Tomikawa. Is that correctly pronounced?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Tell me about yourself and your relationship to the happy science. And also give us a bit of an overview of what it is.
Sure. Happy Science is a global organization that empowers individuals to find purpose and spiritual happiness, and also share that happiness with the people around them. It has more than 12 million members around the world, and we have activities that are based on what they call the principles of happiness, which is love, wisdom, self-reflection, and progress. And through practicing these principles, we want to find happiness for ourselves and as well as for others, and so that we can create a better world, filled with peace and happiness.
Well, I couldn't agree more with the whole aspect of it from the standpoint of wanting to help others, especially because it's not going to be that great of a world if it's just me, if I'm the only one that's happy. What defines a happy person?
Happy person is, I believe, someone who can find happiness for him or herself, and also be able to share that happiness with the people around them, like families, friends, and also, other people around the world. And I believe that this principle is very universal. It means, you know, it overcomes differences between religion or language or race or any differences among people.
But what is happiness? What's the definition according to Ryuho Okawa?
Well, happiness is, first of all, I believe it's really about knowing your purpose in the world, and also being able to give whatever you can offer to other people. So it's really about finding what it is that you were born here for, and also what you can do to create a better world, what you can do to contribute to the world. And I think the difference of the definition of happiness in happy science, what makes it special for happy science, is that it's really about giving, and it's really about what you can do for other people. And actually, he talks about how we can actually find happiness when you are really thinking about what you can do for others than what you can gain from others, which is usually what people often, you know, define what happiness is. People really think about what you can get or gain when they think about happiness, but this is very opposite, and I think that's very interesting.
As you may be aware, we have in this country the Declaration of Independence, and in it it says that we have these inalienable rights, and of them, these aren't the only ones, we have life, liberty, and then they say, and this is very interesting, the pursuit of happiness. Did they know something back then that we're just now sort of being introduced to here in the 21st century, back in the 18th century, 1770s, in terms of incorporating that? Because it seems to me that most people love to sit on the first two, in particular, life and liberty, but they don't quite have a grasp about this whole aspect of pursuing happiness. Is that something that is discussed in this particular work, The Unhappy Syndrome, as far as pursuing happiness, or is it a state that you're either in or you're not?
Well, that's a very interesting question indeed, you know, about mentioning the Declaration of Independence. And I think, I don't know if he talked about that specific topic in this book, but I believe he talks about happiness as being something that we have a responsibility for, meaning we are responsible to really find happiness for ourselves and actually to practice them in our daily life. So I believe it's a very, very global principle that everyone in the world, regardless of where they're from or where they were born, you know, everyone wants to pursue happiness. So I think it's a very global principle. And in regards to that, I think he talks about, like I mentioned, he teaches the principles of happiness, love, wisdom, self-reflection, and progress. And these four principles are very universal. Anyone can practice them to find happiness.
And we're going to talk about those principles as we continue here on the program. We are talking about, of course, as I mentioned before, the Unhappiness Syndrome, 28 Habits of Unhappy People, and How to Change Them. And we're going to talk about how to do just that. But I'm curious, folks, have you ever had these thoughts? My enthusiasm is just completely gone. I live in constant fear of being hurt. I feel trapped in the past. I don't have confidence in my intelligence. I can't find the right person to marry. I'm always busy and have no time. I don't know how to handle a demotion. I'm scared of death, and it just goes on and on. I kind of describe a lot of this, and I hear this from folks from time to time, Mia. You hear it, and it's described as I've come to use the words. People become very much self-deprecating. They're constantly putting themselves down, especially, and they think it's cute. They think it's funny. They think that it doesn't mean anything. And yet, first of all, it grates on me. It's like, oh my gosh, how can you, you know, would you say that about your best friend? You know, would you put them down like that? Why would you do that to yourself? But these kinds of attitudes, they are prevalent globally. They're not just part of the U.S. experience or the Western experience, from your perspective?
Yes, I think it's very global, and I personally, maybe this is more prevalent in Asian countries, Eastern culture as well.
It is interesting, my brother has flown to and has actually lived in China for a number of years because he works for Disney, and he was over there helping to build their amusement park there. I think it was in I don't think it was in Beijing. I can't remember exactly where it was, but in any event. So I don't have that kind of an experience, but what I have experienced through the folks that I've talked with on this program is that the cultures are so different in as much as they have this, I don't know if it's in the DNA or if it's something that's just taught and ingrained in the individual in terms of certain behaviors that not only bring shame to the individual, but they can even bring shame to the family for generations in some instances. What about that particular aspect? Is that exclusively, and if I'm using the right term here, is that exclusively part of the Asian culture, regardless of what country we're talking about? Is that somewhat prevalent?
Yes, I think so. There, of course, there might be some differences among the countries, but, a country where I was born and grew up, which is Japan, we have the similar concept of valuing family over individuals. So I think it's very Asian culture specific thing.
Have you noticed that in particular, because it's where you were born and raised, have you noticed that the Japanese culture has made certain shifts and or changes away from that particular mindset? Not that you wouldn't honor and care for family, but that there's not quite as much of that, or is it still just the same as it has been for hundreds of years, that particular mindset about, the behavior that you exhibit is going to bring shame upon yourself and your family and that type of thing? Is that as prevalent, as strong as it has been?
No, I think it's less prevalent, meaning Japanese culture has been affected by the Western culture a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So we value more individual happiness over family happiness nowadays.
And what about your observations of being a part of the Happy Science and this particular philosophy that you live by? Do you think that's a good thing that the West and its philosophical bent, which is sometimes hard to grab or grasp, is having that kind of an influence on both Asian countries, but obviously countries around the world?
You mean having individualistic values?
That too, but also individualistic, but also the aspect of more of the material things, because you don't get a lot of spirituality, if you will, from the Western culture. That's not the first thing I think of when I think of the Western culture. I do when I think of Eastern, of Asian culture, and the Middle East and so forth. But I don't think that's so much of the West.
Oh, I see. Well, from my observation, my personal opinion, of course, is that I think Western cultures value more developmental progress, whereas Eastern cultures overall, they value like peace and harmony among others.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we can learn from each other, actually. Like, I think Asian countries have been learning development and progress from Western cultures, and probably Western cultures, especially these days, I think they have started to practice more Eastern philosophies and learn from Eastern cultures about creating harmony among people.
What is it about the Happy Science that drew you to it?
Well, I think what made me really interested in is that Happy Science teaches how we can actually integrate, or we can unite both the West and the East under the philosophy. It really has the good parts of both cultures that we can all practice regardless of, you know, the country or the race or ethnicity. And like I said, Principles of Happiness is consists of love, wisdom, self-reflection, and progress. And this has very universal principles that integrate the Western and Eastern cultures.
Let's talk a little bit about the unhappiness syndrome and these 28 aspects. Now, I mean, I would say that what I was reading there earlier on the back cover of the book probably describes some of those habits, or at least maybe some of the mindsets. What are indeed some of the habits that are exhibited that we might even see day to day from other people that and maybe begin to sort of look in the mirror at ourselves and realize, oh, I'm exhibiting those too. What are some of these habits that you folks bring to light?
For example, these habits are, I think, mostly in relationship with other people. So, for example, if you're working, you might feel jealous of other people's successes when you want to be successful, or were hurt by something that happened in the past, and you kind of embrace fear and you can't really move on. Or maybe you have some issues with your family members and you don't know how to solve them. Or also you might have some doubts or fear about the spiritual aspects of life, especially death. I think these are the very common habits that people have developed to attract unhappiness.
Mm-hmm. And so is there a particular multi-step process that we need to sort of incorporate into our lives in order to begin to break some of these habits to be happy in our lives and to begin to share that with other folks?
Yes, an interesting fact about this syndrome is that the author Ryuhokawa talks about how 80 to 90% of people unconsciously choose thoughts and actions that create unhappiness in their lives. So most of us don't really realize that our own patterns of thoughts and actions are actually inviting unhappiness. When we want to really be happier, so I think the first step is to really recognize what are the thoughts and actions that you're taking right now, and what kind of thoughts and actions are attracting unhappiness, and how can we change them to start attracting happiness. So I think this is the very first step, and it's really actually an important step.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this aspect of achieving this happiness. What are some of the signs, because we can certainly go through as I did there a few moments ago and list some of the verbiage that one might be thinking, let alone actually saying, that indicates, oh, this is a very unhappy person here, whether it's me or someone else. And I've always considered myself to be very optimistic. However, I found myself getting sucked in sometimes to that attitude, if you will, that energy of others, whether it be in the room or off the TV or the movie screen or what have you, or the radio for that matter, from other sources, I guess is a better way to put it, and get drawn in. And sometimes it takes a while. I remember last year during our election campaign, I didn't care up until September of 2016. I just, you know, it's the same old, it's no big deal. I'm going to go about my business doing my thing. And then all of a sudden, something drew me in. And it took me 6 months to, I said it sucked me, and it took me 6 months to get unsucked, you know, kind of thing. To say, you know what, there's nothing I can do about it. I've done all I can up to this point, and I've got to let it go. Because, you know, what's going to happen is going to happen. And I really need to be focused on my, shall we say, my little world and the impact that I'm making where I am. And hopefully it will spread like that proverbial drop in a still pond and the ripple effect and so forth. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Sure. I think what you can, as you said, when we feel unhappy, you know, whether it's sad or angry or whatever negative emotion you're suffering from, I think a lot of times we are letting the environment or things that happen around us kind of take over our life or emotions and thoughts. And like you said, in your case, I think letting go of that thought or feeling was actually, I believe, taking control of your thoughts and feelings. So I think a lot unhappiness syndrome is really about letting outside circumstances take over your life. So to overcome the syndrome, we have to find a way to gain control over thoughts and feelings. We can actually control how we feel and how we think through practicing this.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the other steps that we can begin the process of incorporating? And I guess we'll kind of back that up a little bit and just ask, is it that difficult for us as individuals, especially because some would say, well, gee, you know, you're talking with this woman about this, the happiness science, the happy science founded by Ryuho Okawa. And that sounds awfully Eastern to me, you know, not quite what one might think of as far as one of the Eastern philosophies. But I don't know. I'm here in the United States, and you know, I don't know that this will really work because there is a great deal of resistance. There has been over the decades to outside, shall we say, influence that some people think, oh, they're coming to take over kind of thing, which is not the case here, certainly. But yet there are people who are concerned about whether or not this is for them, whether or not they can incorporate this into their personal, the philosophy that they have chosen to live by. So can we address that just a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Of course, when we encounter new things, I think the first reaction might be to kind of hesitate to accept the new thinking. But well, if they're really happy with what they believe in, I think that's fine. But if they really want to pursue a higher level of happiness or find something new in their lives, I think they have to really give it a try and see if that works, first of all. And if it doesn't work, you know, maybe it's not for them. Mm-hmm. But I, you know, personally believe that really trying out new things really opens up your eyes to new things. And it's really about gaining a new perspective on life and really finding out who you are and why you were born here and, you know, what you can do for the world. And personally, I myself have been practicing the principles that are taught at Happy Science, and they really opened up a new avenue for me. So I really recommend at least learning a bit about this, you know, principles, and if possible, give it a try.
Mm-hmm. Can't hurt. We encourage people. We tell people that, you know, we lay out this smorgasbord, this giant table of ideas and philosophies and concepts and principles and so forth, and we just ask you to come to the table. Try a little, only take what resonates with you, only take what, and see if it works for you. If it doesn't, that's fine. You know, we're not asking you to accept everything. I get enthusiastic over just having the conversations about this, and it really, it helps to, you know, sort of enlighten me as well and inspire me to try to you know, to find those better ways of living. The foundation of the Happy Science, can you give us some information about how it came about, how old is it, and so forth, as well as its founder? But let's talk about the origins of the Happy Science.
Yes, it was established in 1986. So it was founded about 30 years ago. And it really started with the principles of happiness. The founder and also author, Ryohkawa, discovered these principles of happiness that can apply to all people, and, you know, transcending boundaries of culture and religion. And it really started with spreading these principles. And he has been writing more than 2,300 books to really explain what these principles are and what the ways that people can find happiness in their lives. So it's really about finding happiness that's at the basis of Happy Science.
And Ryohkawa is the founder. What was it that led him to create this science, this philosophy? I don't think that religion is quite the right word, but it certainly is a philosophy.
Well, it actually began, or he has been pursuing happiness himself, and he has been searching for ways to find happiness for himself. And I think this is a very Eastern concept, again, but he has achieved an enlightenment or awakening about what happiness is. And he has awakened to his mission to spread what his discoveries with other people, and that really prompted him to start Happy Science.
And are there, I know that you mentioned the basic principles, if you will, of love, wisdom, self reflection, and progress. It sounds to me an awful lot, as far as his initial, shall we say, discovery and or creation, if you will, of the Happy Science, that he was doing what a lot of folks here in the West were doing back in the 60s. They would say, I'm not going to college because I'm going to hit the road and I'm going to try to find myself. The real irony there, of course, is the fact that you don't have to go anywhere. you don't have to leave your home and family to find yourself. You can find yourself right where you are. But that was part of our process. And is that really kind of where he was at? And obviously he had a different cultural influence that obviously fostered that need. But you also said that he was given an awakening.
Yes. He was actually a very successful business person, and he didn't really plan to become a founder of this global organization. He wasn't trying to do that. But one day, one afternoon, he talks about it in his biography. But he received an awakening or message, telling him that this is his mission to really start an organization and spread happiness around the world.
How has he described this awakening? Where did it come from?
Well, he talks about how it came from heaven, and he talks about, not in this book, but in another book, about his experience, about one day he was meditating and he received a calling, if you will, from heaven about explaining his mission in this world.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's to me, it's extraordinary, and I'm certainly grateful for the fact that we have this available to at least to research and investigate, and we want to continue to discuss this further here. Mia, we also are very thankful for you as well. Mia Tamakawa is our guest. We're discussing the unhappiness syndrome, which is I'm assuming it's the latest work by Riho Akawa, but it's one of them at the very least that we're talking about, the unhappiness syndrome, 28 habits of unhappy people and how to change them. It is, of course, from the author of over 100 million books sold worldwide. And I would like to discuss a little bit more, if I could, Mia, you said that you were born and raised in Japan, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And so what religious or spiritual influences did you have growing up?
Well, Japan has a very interesting culture. It kind of integrates many different beliefs. We celebrate Christmas, and we also are influenced by Buddhist culture, and we have Shintoism, which is a faith in Japanese gods. So it has very mixture of different beliefs. So as I grew up, I think I was exposed to many different types of beliefs.
And how did you feel about that then, as far as all of these different things? Did it all make sense to you, or maybe that wasn't necessarily the point, that it served you and your family and the people around you? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yes, I think it really had a good influence in me, that I was I could be very flexible to different cultures and different beliefs. But I think Japanese culture is very, very abstract, in a sense that we don't really have a specific borderline or guideline as to what we should be believing. So I think a lot of Japanese people, when they talk about their beliefs or spirituality, it's probably difficult for them to define what it is that they actually believe in. For myself, I personally had this vague belief in God, or this supernatural being that we have faith in, but I didn't really have any specific definition as to what God is, or what can we do, or what we're supposed to be doing to practice that faith.
And so you were sort of raised, in a manner of speaking, to be open to different ideas, it sounds like.
Yes. And I have to admit that I was a little bit skeptical at the same time about the existence of God, or, about existence of different religions. And of course, if you watch the news, you see many problems on the news about terrorist attacks, or, conflicts between religions. So I always wonder why people had to fight over their beliefs, when we all believe in God. So that was a big question I had as I grew up.
Well, I have to say, this is, again, it's very interesting for me to have a chance to chat with you, and I hope we can continue to do so. Can you stay with us for a little bit longer?
Sure, of course.
Absolutely.
I'll be glad to.
We're going to take a short little break here. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and we are having, I think, a great conversation here with our guest today, Mia Tomikawa, and we're discussing the unhappy syndrome in reference to The Happy Science, which we're going to talk more about as well here on the program. And we encourage you to stay with us. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. And part of that has to do with seeking out and pursuing happiness from the perspective, at least, of our founding fathers here in the United States. So we certainly hope that you will. Mia, tell us the website that people can go to get further information.
Yes, it's okawabooks.com. It's OKAWA books.com. And you can learn a lot more about the author and the books that he's published.
Is there a website for Happy Science? Or is it to say basically the same?
No, it's happyscience.org. That's the website for Happy Science.
Very good, folks. We'll be linked to that, happyscience.org as well. And we encourage you folks to check that out. We are going to return shortly. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks for staying with us here on the program as we continue talking with our very special guest. And we're talking to her all the way via Skype, I should say. Mia Tomikawa, thank you so much for staying with us and continuing our conversation on the unhappy syndrome.
Thank you, Richard.
This is something that I'm curious as to the reception. How has the happy science been received over the last 30 years or so, not only in Japan, but even here in the West?
Yes, it was founded originally in Japan, so it has grown rapidly in Japan. And then we have been expanding our activities around the world for over 30 years, and it has been becoming more known in the Western countries as well.
And it's being received fairly well. I understand, obviously, that Ryuho Okawa, he's the founder, but is he the central figure, or is the emphasis not on Okawa, but on the philosophy itself, on the science, if you will, the happy science and the principles therein?
Well, I think it's both. Ryuho Okawa is a central figure as the founder and also the teacher. But I think what attracts a lot of people is the actual the principles or teachings that he is giving through his lectures and books. And I believe these teachings and principles are universal. So I believe overall they have been received well outside of Japan.
Well, I know that what I find fascinating as I've gone through my own personal search and study and so forth, that individuals within a particular philosophical institution, it's the individuals who seem to be very open-minded. But if you were to, so to speak to the institution, they don't want you to have anything to do with any other ways of thinking or being or living. You know, they want you to, you know, stick with the philosophy that we've laid out here, and that's all there is. And that's the thing that sort of gives me hope, is that it is the individuals who are the ones that are truly making the difference and making a change in our world. That is something that is a focal point for Okawa as well, is making this a better place for everyone to live, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And one of the things that really attracted me the most to Happy Science and the teachings that Happy Science provides is that it's very, very open-minded. It really accepts different types of beliefs, and it even offers the background and explanations about the beliefs in other religions. And that's why I felt that these principles can really unite the world into one.
Mm-hmm. Well, we certainly could use some more unity in this world. There's no question about it. It has become quite a struggle. And again, you could mention just about any part of the world. You could mention just about any situation that exists, and you would find yourself stressed out. And I know that this has been a big concern years ago. You know, it used to be you'd hear the phrase, I want to change the world. And then when you started thinking about the world, oh, that's too much. It's too monumental. I can't change the world. And some folks, in a manner of speaking, they sort of gave up. And then, of course, the idea was, well, rather than trying to change the world all at once, that monolithic kind of thing, start small, start where you are. And I think that's what the happy science is talking about as well, isn't it?
Yes, I think it's really about individuals, of course, because the world, after all, world is created by the people who live in the world. So by if each individual changes, or if each individual can find happiness in their own way, the world would be a bit better place mm-hmm. as a result.
What changes have you experienced in your own life? Because, again, I don't know all that much about it. I'm learning as you and I are conversing, and as we've had many guests talk about the happy science over the last few years here on this program. How has this changed your life over the preceding years?
Well, I think the biggest impact that it had was really it opened up my eyes to a new perspective, a new way of seeing things. And it's really about, I guess for me, I was kind of suffering from the unhappiness syndrome myself, you know, before I really opened up myself to the new philosophy of happy science. And I was really thinking about how I can become happier, but I was trying to do that through changing the people around me, or changing the circumstance I was in. Mm-hmm. And all that time, actually, I was really letting the outside circumstances decide what I should be feeling, instead of really looking into my mind and really discover greatness inside me, and this power of being able to change my life for the better by really choosing the actions and thoughts that really attract happiness. So that really made a big impact on me.
And as far as this, again, it's just barely 30 years old, this philosophy, and obviously hundreds of millions of books have been printed around the world in different languages. And so obviously there is a receptivity to it. If I'm understanding correctly, it does not have a lot of the same, shall we call them, trappings or features, if you will, that a lot of the older philosophies that have been around for thousands of years have, like a centralized individual that you are to follow, and a set of rules that you have to live by. This seems to me to be quite the voluntary choice for people, as well as one that you can choose to take, travel this path alone, or you can travel this path with others. It seems to me like there's a much greater freedom. Am I correct in that assessment of what little I do know?
Yes, I think it's very correct. And it really doesn't force you to do anything. The happy science doesn't really force you to do anything. It really wants to help you find happiness. And like I mentioned earlier about how there are many conflicts among religions and people who practice different beliefs, and they often say that their belief is the best, or that's the only correct belief. But happy science really embraces different beliefs and different teachings. Mm-hmm. So anyone, I think, can come to happy science and really practice these teachings and find something that resonates with them. And that's, I think, one of the most interesting characteristics about happy science.
And I think it's a good one, too, because I know a lot of folks, they are looking for something. You know, everybody seems to be looking for something, searching for, trying to figure out what their place is in the universe. How does the happy science address the whole aspect, or is that really relevant as to the universe and its creation and a lot of the other things that some of the other philosophies seem to take into consideration and sort of mandate what you're supposed to believe about them.
Yes, about the universe, I think happy science teaches that it's each of us is part of the whole universe, or we are really connected, interconnected with one another, and we as a whole influence and together create this world or the universe, if you will. So it really doesn't really cut you off from the rest of the world or the universe. You're really actually very deeply connected to the universe and higher existence. So I think that's very unique about what happy science teaches.
Is there what might be considered to be a place, a physical place, that is sort of, for lack of a better phrase, terminology, a holy place, you know, a sacred space, if you will?
Yes, we do have temples or centers that we can go to where Happy Science offers seminars and meditation practices, and people can go there to pray and meditate and really have inner conversations with themselves. And a lot of people have been receiving inspirations, and, you know, they have made discoveries about themselves. So we have temples. Most of them are located in Japan, but we have some overseas as well.
Mm-hmm. I would assume there are probably some here in the United States. In terms of Okawa's travels, he's traveled the world. He's met with all the different cultures, I'm sure, and shared this philosophy, obviously in person as well as through the writings. And again, I think, as you did sort of iterate, that it's been fairly well received, because it's not saying you've got to give up this to accept that.
Exactly. I think they're all connected. You know, whatever you now believe in is not something that you need to discard to find or practice new beliefs or new teachings.
And Maya Tomikawa is my guest, and we're talking about the unhappiness syndrome, written by Yoshi Okawa. And we're talking about those 28. Why only 28? Do you know? Because it seems like there could be a whole lot more.
Right. These are most common ones, okay, that we can find. Of course, there are millions of habits, I believe.
Absolutely. The 28 habits of unhappy people and how to change them, both the habits and the people. And we certainly would encourage you to pick up a copy of the book. And just to reiterate, folks, that we all wish for happiness. So why do we have so much? Why do we have to suffer such anguish and angst and just this goes on day in and day out? I would think too that one of the other principles, maybe it's not actually literally part of one of the principles or processes of breaking these habits, is basically to begin the process of cutting yourself off from, shutting down, shutting off some of those negative distractions. I don't have a social media presence. I don't have Facebook. I do have a Twitter account, but I rarely, if ever, send anything, and I'm not monitoring it. The most I monitor is my email. Maybe I'm one of those old fogies, a throwback to the 1990s, that's what we dealt with. But it seems to me like that would be the way to go, as well as disconnecting, and sometimes it's necessary, from those people who are of a negative influence. And it seems to me that if you were to begin this process that is talked about in the book, you're going to draw to you people who are like-minded, but you're also going to send away those people who are not and don't like the changes that are happening in you, they may make an attempt to try to change you back, hopefully unsuccessfully, and then they realize, oh, I don't want any part of this, because they seem to like their unhappiness.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very correct. And we can choose to let these people influence us, or we can choose to let go of their negative influences over ours. And I think it's our choice. People can say many different things, and you know, some people may say nasty things to us, but we can really have the control to let them bother us, or you know, let go of whatever they said to us. So I think what you said was very correct.
Did you have, before you accepted and incorporated this into your life, did you have a lot of negative influences in your life that were outside yourself, influencing a lot of the messages that were inside yourself?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think before I started practicing these principles, I used to depend on other people's for my happiness. Like if other people treated me a certain way, I'll be happy. Or if other people recognize or praise what I've done, I'll be happy. So I really depended on how other people evaluated me, and I could never find happiness that way, because it's really up to each one of us how we see ourselves. You know, if we see ourselves as a good and happy person, or if we see ourselves as unhappy person, and it really, that's I think the most important way of seeing ourselves.
Well, I can honestly say that I would much rather be happy than not. I'm not a real fan of horror films. I'm not a real fan of a lot of the drama stuff. More nowadays, because I, you know, when I first start watching something, it's like, I know where this is going, and this is stupid. I mean, that's one of the, that's one of the things that I've come to realize, that a lot of this stuff is just, it's such a waste of time for me. I have no problem watching cartoons because I know they're stupid. I know going in because I like to laugh. I know that you're probably familiar with some of the folks in our country, in the United States, who, going back many years, who wrote some rather famous books and so forth. They were told by their doctors, oh, you're going to die. You know, you got 6 months. And they started watching all kinds of comedy stuff, Three Stooges and different cartoons and this and that and the other thing. They went on and lived for years. Because they said, "Nah, I disagree with you. I've got a long life to live, and I'm going to live it, and I'm going to be happy." So I think that it really comes down to that choice that we talk about here, giving people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true. What before we wrap up here, what are some of those? Can you share with us? Because I asked you earlier about this from one perspective. What were some of the dreams that you had for your life that have come true, or have those changed and subsequently come true for you since you've been involved with the Happy Science?
Well, I think before I got involved with the Happy Science, it's really all about me, like in a sense that I really wanted to find happiness for myself. Like I was really occupied with how I can really achieve what I want in my life. But it really like shifted my focus to how I can share happiness or spread happiness with those around me. And it became really about others and the world. And I think the interesting thing was that I was so much happier when I try to make others happier, rather than trying to find happiness only for myself, because you can actually share that wonderful feeling with other people. And it really satisfies me in the truest sense to be able to serve others and help others find happiness. So that was a big, big shift for me.
When I hear that, I think of the story of the Buddha sitting at the Bodhi tree and discovering enlightenment. And he realized that the moment he stopped searching for it, he found it. And so in a manner of speaking, that's kind of what you're saying. When you start sharing happiness, even if you're not, okay, you start sharing it, it comes back to you.
Exactly. I think that's what I experienced too.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. I think something for folks, especially whether it's around the holidays or whatever time of year it is, to try to incorporate into their lives. You can't go wrong, quite honestly, because we're all looking for, that space where we can be happy. And you're not, and neither is Okawa. He's not advocating that we should be happy all the time. That's an impossibility because we're human and we have emotions of all shades and shapes and sizes and colors, if you will. So if we can find ways of getting back into that state, which it sounds to me like the Happy Science teaches, well, then we can stay in that state more often than not. Because is that a fair assessment that he's not? There is no. It's not advocating being happy 100% of the time.
Yes, it's. I think it's a journey. Life is a journey for a search of happiness and our mission and purpose in life. And, sometimes we can't really avoid hardships and difficulties, but we can learn from them and try to gain experiences and wisdom from them. That really gives us true contentment and happiness
and,
in true essence.
What about your family? Have they embraced this same science, the happy science, as you, or is this something that you have just gone off and decided this is what I want for my life and I'll share it with my family, but they don't have to come along?
Well, I've been sharing these teachings with my family, but I think I'm more of the passionate one among the family. But they have been learning these principles, and I'm sure it has had good influence over them too.
Mm. Well, Mia Tomokawa, thank you so much for joining us here on the program. It's been a great pleasure, and I am guessing that we are talking to you. You're in Japan, or are you here in the States?
Oh, I'm in Japan right now.
And it's tomorrow where you are right now. And it sounds like it's a good day, so I'm looking forward to tomorrow. And I thank you so much for joining us here on the program. And, if you should find yourself here in the United States, in Southern California, here in Santa Barbara, we would love to have you in studio to continue this conversation.
Oh, that'd be really great. I'll be really excited to come visit you someday.
That'd be great. Also, before we let you go, I want to remind our listeners, you can go to happyscience.org to find out more about Happy Science. And I believe, Ryohokawa.org, is that correct, for finding out about the books?
It's okawabooks.com.
Okawabooks.com. We'll send people to that website as well. And before we let you go, I have three questions that I'd like to ask my guests before we wrap up the program. And again, I thank you so much for sharing this time with us. The first question is, who is Mia Tomokawa?
Who is Mia? You mean myself?
However you choose to answer that question.
Okay. Well, I am I'm one of the seekers of happiness, I think. That's my definition of who I am. And I'm trying to fulfill my own purpose and the mission in terms of helping people spread and share this happiness that I've discovered.
And again, you may have answered this question throughout the interview, but I'll ask this straightforward. What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, I think it's very simple. I think I want more people to find happiness in the truest sense, as I have been able to. And like I say, life isn't easy. I think it's very difficult. And I also struggle myself. But really knowing ourselves and trying to find the answers and solutions through this journey is very meaningful. And I think a lot of people can really find their purpose and try to discover what happiness means for them. Mm. And that's what I want to achieve through my work.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Well, I think my life's purpose is to spread the principles that really make people happier, no matter where they're from or what culture they were raised in. And I think through that, I want to really make this world a better place for everyone. And I really want to help other people solve their problems and also try to create peace. Because I'm really disheartened by all the negative news around the world. And I think, you know, they have so many issues that they can solve. So that's why they have to, you know, cause many problems. So I really want to help these people too.
Well, thank you again, Mia, for joining us here on the program and for taking the time. And again, we hope that maybe one day we will get to meet you in person here in Santa Barbara or wherever we might be. Or if we're traveling, maybe we'll find our way to Japan and we'll have another conversation like this. And again, I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Richard. It was a pleasure.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices. We've been talking about the unhappiness syndrome, 28 habits of unhappy people and how to change them, written by Ryoho Okawa, and you can also go to okawabooks.com. You can also go to happyscience.org to find out more. We will be linked to these websites as well. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story. And until next time, love to Lal.